Once upon a time, the U.S. Senate was known as the more functional, more collegial, and less partisan half of Congress. But our next guest says that's changed in the last couple of generations. He sees a major shift in the style and the effectiveness of the upper house, and he says a lot of it came from a cadre of newcomers since 1978 who graduated from the House of Representatives to the Senate. He calls them the Gingrich Senators. Sean Theriault is with us now. He's Associate Professor of Government at the University of Texas and author of the new book, The Gingrich Senators, The Roots of Partisan Warfare in Congress. He joins us from the studios of KUT in Austin. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, what was the Senate like before the change in my once upon a time scenario there?
Right. So when we think about the Senate of the middle part of the 20th century, we think of an institution that was able to strike compromise, where people were able to talk across the aisle and figure out when there were huge problems that America confronted, what the solutions to those problems would be. In fact, throughout the 20th century, all sorts of different political scientists and journalists would comment on how the Senate was the one place where they could still see politics getting done and problems being solved.
So it was the House of Compromise versus the House of Representatives, which is the more divided House.
That's right. I mean, the House has always had this kind of majoritarian feel where whichever party was the majority party, they were able to force their will. But just because of the rules of the Senate has always been that place where you need to talk across the aisle in order to get problems solved.
Well, the change starts not in the Senate, but in the House with the arrival of Newt Gingrich and his colleagues. First of all, before we even get to the Senate, how did they change business as usual in the House of Representatives?
Yeah, first we have to go back to the time when Newt Gingrich enters the House. So he enters in 1978, which is 2 years before Ronald Reagan's election. And even in his first term, he was a different kind of politician. He was more confrontational. He was less willing to go along, to get along. He wanted the Republican Party to differentiate itself. But then shortly after his arrival, we get the 1980 election. And in that election, I think we don't think of how transformative that was in Washington, D.C. We not only had a Republican entering the White House again, there had been Republicans in the White House just 4 years earlier. But more importantly, the House saw the Senate Republicans for the first time banging gavels and chairing committees since the 1950s. And so the Republicans were in a minority only in the House of Representatives. And so it was really easy for the message of Newt Gingrich to be more confrontational, to be more differentiating from the Democratic Party, for that to resonate among his colleagues. And of course, there were lots of old-time Republicans, people like Bob Michael, and who had been in the House for years and years, and who still saw the benefits of going along to get along. But with each succeeding class that was entering the House of Representatives, they were kind of raised in this more confrontational style. Newt Gingrich was out in the districts recruiting volunteers to run for Congress, and they were being successful. And so it was a strategy that was building upon itself as more and more people were entering the Republican conference with that confrontational mindset.
Newt Gingrich never entered the Senate, but a lot of the people you're talking about, ones he recruited or helped shape their political career and outlook, did. How many of the Gingrich senators have there been over the years?
So there's been over 40 now. There's 44 to be exact. And there are 22 who are still serving in the Senate. So that means that more than 20 have either lost or retired.
Okay, so these are senators who came up from the House or worked with Newt Gingrich, but is there really something different in the way they vote, the way they do politics?
Yeah, so they vote so differently. This is the one measure that we as a political scientist can measure. We see how senators day after day after day are voting on the Senate floor. And when we look at the class of people that served in the House of Representatives in the era of Newt Gingrich, so after 1978, they vote distinctly differently than either the people who came from the House before 1978 or people who never served in the House. In fact, by some measures, they're more than 60% more conservative than what I term other Republicans who are serving in the Senate at the time.
Is there a similar phenomenon on the Democratic side? You look to see whether there was a group of Gephardt senators named after Richard Gephardt.
Yeah, that's right, because Dick Gephardt enters about the same time that Newt Gingrich does. Initially, when I started this whole research project, I didn't come up with this idea myself, but I was looking at the literature in political science, and it said that the reason the Senate was changing was because these former House members were coming in. And so sure enough, when I started looking at the data and I see who previously served in the House, I saw that, sure, House members were adding something different. They were voting more ideological than before. And then I just on a whim decided to separate it by party. So look and see how Democrats voted versus Republicans who'd served in the House. And it was a one-party phenomenon. So the Democrats who were coming over from the House weren't voting any differently than they ever had or voting any differently than people who hadn't served in the House. It was only people who served in the Republican Party who were coming over from the House. And so then when I looked at it across time, I saw that, in fact, when Republicans were coming over from the House in the 50s and 60s, they were voting more moderately. But there was a clear break that happens in the late 1970s, right at the time that Newt Gingrich is elected, where they start entering the Senate and voting much more conservatively. And it makes sense because the Democratic Party in the House in the 1970s and 80s was the majority party. So there was no reason for the Democratic Party to have this confrontational style, this differentiation that was so important to Newt Gingrich. They were the minority party. And so he knew that the only way to shift this imbalance where the Republicans could someday become a majority party was by having this more confrontational style.
We're talking to Sean Theriault, professor at the University of Texas. In his new book, The Gingrich Senators, he makes the case that Newt Gingrich, though not a senator himself, played a key role in changing the U.S. Senate because of his colleagues who went up there, voted differently, and acted differently. It's now more partisan, less able to get things done than it was, say, in the middle of the last century. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue the conversation now with Sean Theriault. He's author of The Gingrich Senators, The Roots of Partisan Warfare in Congress. He makes the case that the U.S. Senate underwent a fundamental shift in the last 30 years or so, resulting in a more partisan, more divisive atmosphere. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you agree? Have you seen that change? Why do you think it's happened? Before we get to your calls, Sean, I wanted to ask, you mentioned how the Gingrich senators, the people who went from the House to the Senate in the Gingrich era and beyond, vote more conservatively, more consistently, more ideologically. Do they behave differently? Has it changed the climate in the Senate and how it works?
It has. And a harder task for political scientists are trying to figure out the behavioral changes, because with roll call votes, we can look and see how people are voting. But when it comes time for figuring out how people are going to compromise, how people are going to negotiate over a budget or the debt ceiling, or whether or not people are going to co-sponsor bills across the aisle, it gets harder for us because those data aren't readily available. Through a series of episodes, I examined the behavioral aspects of the Senate, and I find that some of the greatest failures that the Senate have had over the last 5 or 6 years, at each turn, the reason that they're not solving problems is because there's a set of Republicans who aren't doing something that they said that they would. And sure enough, when I go back and look who those people were, more times than not, great preponderance of the time, there are the Gingrich senators and in fact themselves. And so when we look at the behavioral stuff, we find that the other Republicans in many ways are behaving just as they always had and just as the Democrats are today. But it's just the set of folks who learn the politics of Newt Gingrich in the House and then transferred that experience to their service in the Senate that have caused this fundamental shift in the Senate.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Steve on the line in Brookfield. Steve, hi.
Hello. I was just wondering if your data shows any connection between the greater influence of special interest money with this group of senators. Did that change occur, and are they speaking more from special interest influence?
Thanks for your question, Steve. That's really insightful. So I don't actually look at too much of what's happening among interest groups and who they're donating money to. But in terms of the campaigns that the Gingrich senators are running, because they're more conservative, they've had to offset their conservatism by raising a lot more money. And in fact, they have. So in order to survive at approximately the same rate as other Republicans who have a more moderate voting record, they've had to raise a lot more money, sometimes as many as 20-30% more than the other Republicans, in order to maintain their electoral viability. And no doubt, had I dug a little deeper to find out where that money is coming from, that I could have found it. An interesting side note here is that a lot of the funding that happened for what I'm now calling the Tea Party senators comes from Jim DeMint and the Senate Conservative Fund. And so that one particular special interest has had an enormous effect on how the Senate operates.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go now to David in Lyons. David, hi.
Hi. Hey, thanks for the topic. This is great. It's good to have some openness there. I think you're giving... I think you're giving Gingrich a little bit too much credit, and I think that the senators and congressmen that vote conservative are voting that way because that's what their constituents are requiring of them. That's why they're voted in. I know that there was a bit of divisiveness that began back in the 80s, but don't give Gingrich that much credit. And, the Democrats aren't innocent in the partisan politics either. It's just, it's way too far apart now. And we do need a coalition between both ideologies to be able to get some things done in this country.
David, interesting points and questions there. Thanks for calling. So that main point, it's not a Gingrich-led wave. It's constituencies wanting conservative senators.
Yeah. So, and that's exactly what I thought. When I looked at the folks of senators that I'm calling the Gingrich senators, I look at the states that they come from Georgia and Louisiana and Oklahoma. And I thought, surely David was right in his comments. And so what I do is I look at how each of those states voted in the previous presidential election. And then I don't want to get in the weeds too much here, but I control for that in looking at how they vote. And when I parse all of that out and the computer spits out the numbers, it tells me that only about 20% of the conservative nature of the Gingrich senators is a consequence of their conservative states from which they come. Because there's also some Gingrich senators who come from states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, and some of those more purple or even blue states, Colorado is another example. And so there certainly is an element that these folks are coming from more conservative states. But even still, they're voting more conservative than we would think. Then they would be coming from those conservative states.
So two Republican senators from the same conservative state, one of them is one of these Gingrich senators, came up through the House, one wasn't. There's going to be a probably noticeable voting difference, you're saying.
Yeah, there is. And so throughout the book, I'm always what I call the Senate pairs. I'm comparing the two senators, one of them who, as you say, comes from the House under Newt Gingrich and the other one who doesn't. And sure enough, 90% of the time, the more conservative of the two are the ones that came up through the House in the era of Newt Gingrich.
Thanks a lot for the call. We've got John on the line now in Windsor. John, hi.
Hi. A classic example of that is Rick Santorum. You know, he would never have won in Pennsylvania. He was so conservative, but, you know, he did. I would totally agree with you, the speaker, and totally disagree with the previous person. Newt Gingrich basically drove Bob Michael out of Congress. And then, when you think about the tactics that he used in Congress with the cameras when they started C-SPAN, and he would go on his rages every night, until what happened was that they decided they were going to back up the cameras and show there was nobody in the audience.
You described that episode in the book, Sean. John, thanks for the call. So he thinks, he agrees that Newt Gingrich is a powerful influence. Now, I should ask, how much of this is Newt Gingrich himself leading these Gingrich senators, or how much of it is he's a sign of an era? Sean.
Right. So I think that he is a sign of an era. One of the ways I try and peel back the layers a little bit is looking at people who might have a closer personal relationship with Newt Gingrich. So how long did they serve in the House? Were they part of Newt Gingrich's leadership team? Were they part of the Congressional Campaign Committee? And all of those individual kind of closeness to Newt Gingrich factors don't matter that much. What matters is that they served at the House during a particular time when the Republican conference was going through a radical transformation from being one like the previous caller John talked about with Bob Michael to being one that was very much kind of built in the image of Newt Gingrich. And it was serving in that more partisan, confrontational Republican conference had transformed them. And of course, that transformation only happens because of Newt Gingrich.
Sean, we've talked about maybe downside in terms of not getting things done in Congress, but is there an upside here? Maybe we should have ideologically consistent parties that fight for the principles that people elected them to represent.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, one of the benefits of party polarization is that we know what party stands for issues, and we know what the other party and the issues that they stand for. So there's a clear distinction that the voters have. And I think that's healthy for democracy. But what I think has to happen is after the election happens, all the legislators need to come to Washington and they need to solve our problems. And that's what's not getting done. I have to give kudos to Newt Gingrich, because if he hadn't embarked on this strategy of transforming the Republican conference, it's likely that the Republicans would still be a minority in the House of Representatives. But he recognized that they needed to transform the way that they did business. And within 14 years of Ronald Reagan's election, sure enough, Newt Gingrich is banging the Speaker's gavel in the House of Representatives. So there's no doubt that it was a successful strategy. But we need to get the folks to come back to Washington and to solve our real problems.
We'll leave it there and maybe talk about that again in the future. Sean, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
That was Sean Theriault. He's professor at the University of Texas. We've been talking about his new book. It's called The Gingrich Senators.